Dave and Ryan's movie review and action.
Everyone loves going to the movies. And while some are amazing, some are awful. Fortunately, we have Dave and Ryan, two guys with nothing better to do than watch movies of today and movies of yesterday. So get your popcorn ready, silence your phones, and relax, because the show is about to begin.
Cue Dave and Ryan in 3, 2, 1.
It's Dave and Ryan's movie review.
Sponsored by nobody.
Welcome into another edition of Dave and Ryan's movie review, take 105. How you feeling?
Super duper.
Super duper. Well, you know what? We got a lot to do today.
We do.
So let's just get right into it. We're going to Hollywood.
Welcome to Hollywood Boulevard, the place of glitz, glamour, and dreams. Just kidding. This place is a dump. That's why Dave and Ryan come here each week. You get the news from Hollywood without fearing for your life on the Walk of Fame. It's This Week in Hollywood.
All right, so came out, when did this come out? On Thursday?
Mm-hmm.
I don't even know if you necessarily call it a teaser, because there was nothing really in it. It's just maybe a movie announcement, let's put it that way. Yeah. We are going to get a Spaceballs 2.
Yes!
In 2027. Rick Moranis is coming out of retirement to be in this movie. Bill Pullman is returning, and Mel Brooks will be in this movie. I don't want to say this because it's going to sound terrible. I don't think he's going to be around for when it opens.
Wow.
Well, he turns 99 on June 28th, but he looks good for 99.
Yeah.
So more power to him. He will be back, of course, as Yogurt in Amazon. It's Amazon MGM Studios' new Spaceballs movie, set to be. It's being written by Josh Gad, who is also going to star in this movie. He's got a couple of other writing friends that are going to help him with this one. So, this should be a fun movie. It really will be, and I think the draw is Rick Moranis coming back.
Yeah, definitely.
Because he hasn't been in anything for a very, very long time, and with good reason.
Yep.
I think it was his wife passed away, and he retired from acting to take care of his family.
Yeah, she was sick.
Yeah.
And that's when and then after he passed away, he just...
Yep, stayed away.
Mm-hmm.
So good for him.
Except for, you know, the
Mint Mobile commercial. Yeah. Yeah. Well, if anybody's going to get him to do anything, it's Ryan Reynolds. Fellow Canadian Ryan Reynolds. I told my wife that he was coming back. She goes, okay, I want to get some work in on Bob and Doug now. The McKenzie brothers got to make a comeback now.
Yes.
All right. So also, James Gunn expects a new Batman 2 script shortly and says that it's still really important in the DCU. With the new on-screen DCU taking shape in Metropolis, Matt Reeves' Batman is still going to be lurking around the shadows of Gotham City. Gunn recently in a interview to Entertainment Weekly said what Matt Reeves, is the director and writer, is doing is really important despite all stories to the contrary. We're supposed to be seeing that script shortly, and I can't wait. And then in the same interview, a new Wonder Woman is being written right now following Gal Gadot. She will not be in it. So we get a new Wonder Woman. I think they've already cast her. I think I've seen somewhere that they've already cast a new Wonder Woman.
I have no idea.
So that is coming as well. Are you looking forward to another Batman movie with Robert Pattinson?
I didn't see the first one.
The problem that I had with the first one is it could have been shorter. It was almost 3 hours long, and there were so many points in that movie where they could have just ended, and they chose not to. So, all right, projection for this week. Are you ready? How to Train Your Dragon. Live action CGI. 80 to 100 million is the projection. What do you think?
110.
110. You think it's going to knock Lilo and Stitch out of there?
For first place, yes.
Okay, I'm saying $75 million. I don't think it's going to make it. I really don't. We talked about the fact that is this a movie that we really need to see? I don't know. All right, so there's that box office for last week. Final Destination Bloodlines comes in at number 5 with $6.5 million, bringing its total to $123.5. Karate Kid Legends, sadly,
I'm surprised that's still on there.
Is on its way out. I don't think it'll be there next week. Comes in at number 4 with $8.7 million. Mission Impossible, The Final Reckoning, brought in $15 million. That was good enough for third place, bringing its total to $149 million. The movie that we're going to review today, Ballerina from the world of John Wick pulled in $25 million. And Lilo and Stitch still sitting on top, 32.5, bringing its domestic total to 335.7 and its international worldwide total to $800 million.
Wow.
Right? So how did we do? All right. Last week, we chose John Wick, Ballerina. Ryan said $38 million. I said 34.
We were both wrong.
We were both wrong. That's right.
By a lot.
By a lot. $25 million. We overshot the green, definitely, on that one. And then we did two because the Phoenician scheme came out.
Yeah.
And we talked about that. So the total was $6.2 million is what it brought in. Ryan, you nailed it.
Well, I was off by 0.2.
Well, that's okay. $200,000 in the grand scheme of things is not bad, especially since I said $10
million. Yeah.
So we're way off on there. So that's it for that this week. Once again, we're going to do a review of John Wick, from the world of John Wick, Ballerina. We're going to talk about that one. We're also going to be bringing in Ryan's friend and professor, and we're going to talk about some character development in a technical segment. We haven't done one of these for a while.
Yep.
Ryan gets really excited when we start talking about technical stuff.
Yay!
See? Just for him. So we'll do all that when we come back on Dave and Ryan's Movie Review.
Welcome into another Honest Movie Review. Today, we go back to 2000 for the American science fiction film Battlefield Earth, starring John Travolta.
When we attacked your planet, all your soldiers and all their advanced technology could only put up a measly 9-minute fight before they were exterminated. Which is why man is an endangered species.
The best way for me to describe this movie would be a cross between Star Wars and poop. I can't wait to speak with you again next week.
Everyone on set, shut up. Shut up. These two buffoons are about to talk about a new release. Dave and Ryan's Movie Review, Segment 1. Action.
What's more exciting than a brand new release to the movie theater? According to Dave and Ryan, nothing. They're the first to see it, so you're the first to hear about it.
So today we're going to talk about From the World. Got to be the longest movie title of all time.
From the world
of John Wick, Ballerina.
There's a woman who loves to dance.
Well,
she is the ballerina.
At one time, she liked to dance. Let's put it that way.
That's how it would be like if it was like a 90s sitcom.
Right? So, yeah, from the world of John Wick, Ballerina. It hit last week, rated R, 2 hours, 4 minutes, starts Ana de Armas.
What kind of dancing she doing if it's rated R?
Well, I'm just saying.
The seductive death kind.
That's right. Ana de Armas, Keanu Reeves, Ian McShane, Norman Reedus is in this one. And Lance, is it Lance Riddick? Is that his name? That is the concierge at the Continental?
This was his last film.
And so that's the whole thing. That's what I was going to say, is he passed away in 2023.
Yeah.
So that's how long this movie's kind of been sitting out there. And in fact, I think this movie was supposed to come out last year, like last fall or something, if I remember correctly. Anyway.
I don't know.
I don't either. Deals with Eve.
Eve.
That's right. At the beginning, the movie opens. She's a child. Her father is pretty much just assassinated, really. He's killed. Well, let's put it that way.
She lives in a castle.
Yes.
So as a child, she lives in a castle.
There's some sort of.
And that was all taken away.
It was. And she's taken. It looked like she was at a police station or a hospital, maybe. And that's when Winston comes and picks her up at the hospital and takes her to.
It doesn't really say where she was.
No.
Like what country she was in or anything like that. And then to have just Winston randomly just pop up. Apparently, time and travel does not mean a thing to any of these people.
Nothing.
No, because at the end when John Wick showed up, it was like they're in like Croatia or something like that. And he calls her. This is in the trailer. He calls her and she's like, I can send someone. And she's in New York.
Mm-hmm.
And then like 20 minutes later, John Wick shows up on a train. So Time and travel mean nothing.
That's DoorDash right there. That's what that is. So anyway, she is taken to the Ruscaroma, which is led by the director, who was played by Angelica Houston.
Yep.
And she,
where John Wick grew up.
That's right. So she kind of trains her. I think the ballet is a front. Is kind of how it is. Yes and no.
In order to teach some discipline, that's why they dance. And you know, anyone who knows anything about a ballerina dancer, it's hard.
Definitely.
Like when she's practicing. And her feet are all bloody and from, you know, repeating and failing and getting up again and getting up again. It shows, you know, their determination.
And the other part of it, too, is gives me some real Red Room vibes. Like these are all Black Widows in training kind of thing almost.
Yeah.
That's basically kind of what the whole ordeal is. But there are also men here as well.
Yes.
So anyway, she is... advancing her way up, and she is chomping at the bit to go to work.
Yeah.
Because she wants to find the guys that killed her dad. I think that's what the driving force of the whole thing is.
Yeah. And on her, she goes on her first assignment, and then, what was it, like 6 months later is when she found the guys with the X on the mark?
X on the arm, yeah. And that's another gentleman that was in this. Not in very many movies anymore.
No.
And man, does Gabriel Byrne play a good villain or what?
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. I like how she just shows up to this town and, like, everyone's out to get her.
Everyone is out to get this woman. The action is, Ryan and I went and saw this separately, and he told me people that enjoy the John Wick movies might not like this one because it is. The action is nonstop.
From the very beginning, it's just wham, bam, thank you, ma'am, right in your face.
If you're like me and you like gratuitous violence with no reasoning behind it whatsoever, you're going to love this movie.
Yeah, if you want something that has more of a story and a purpose behind the gratuitous violence, then this isn't your thing.
It's there. You got to
It's vaguely there.
You got to sort of read, like, you know, she
wants
the lines.
You know she wants revenge, and then that's just like, that's the story.
Yeah, pretty much, that's it. But I really enjoyed this movie. I did. And yes, there are some things in here. In fact, I sent Ryan a text when it was over. But there are some things in here that are kind of off the wall, kind of, oh yeah, right kind of things. And I said, really, the only thing that bugged me is the fact that she drives a Mustang in the snow. That was it.
Yeah, and... the whole thing where she got the car, I don't want to give a whole lot away because I want people to go see this, but when she's basically in the armory, outside of the Continental in Croatia
or wherever
she was at, they just attack out of nowhere.
And what it is, and you'll come to find out there's a deeper meaning to it, but yes, the entire town is out for her blood.
Yeah, well, so most of these in the John Wick universe, they're organizations. Like the one John Wick's a part, I can't remember. You said it earlier.
Ruscaroma.
Yeah, you know, that's an organization. The one that Lawrence Fishburne is, his underground organization, and then the Continentals. They're all part of this big...
The High Table.
Yeah, the High Table, you know, who kind of sees over things. And this is kind of an outside group. Who's not necessarily banished, not necessarily watched or even controlled, just kind of...
We're going to let them do their own
thing. Yeah, pretty much. You don't mess with us, and we won't mess with you. That's their whole deal.
If you're from Utah and you know anything about Utah history, they're Zionists.
Yes.
They don't even want to be messing with them.
Yeah.
So, but I really like this movie. Great performance. Gabriel Byrne, it was great to see him in something because I haven't seen him for a while. And he is such a good bad guy in this one. I'm giving this one 4 buckets. I enjoyed it. It was a lot of fun. In fact, it made me go home and start watching the John Wick movies. So,
anything to get Dave to sit down and watch a movie is a good thing.
That's right.
I really enjoyed this one, too. The action in it was amazing. The cinematography could have been a little better in some spots. But it's, you know, we talked about this earlier, you know, with action. There's a fine line because you don't want to see blurriness. You want to see it clear. And so this movie's not a high frame rate movie, you might be thinking, well, what is that? Well, remember when the Hobbit movies came out? They had that high frame rate. So, like, things look really realistic, even like when fast motion. That's they did this a little old school where there's a lot of blurriness stuff going on. And so if you're looking for a high caliber action movie, this one's not quite there. It's still a very good one, but I just think the cinematography could have been a little better. But I am going to give this one 4 buckets.
You know, there was that's the bummer about the cinematography, and some of these killing shots and some of the ways that these people die in this movie could have been clearer.
Yeah. Maybe that's the whole reason why they blurred it.
And I would say this.
If we don't blur this, this movie is going to be rated X.
I will say this. My favorite kill shot was when she was escaping the armory and she put that thing around the guy's neck and jumped over the table.
Oh, yeah.
And then just pulled him down and on the table. That was probably my favorite part. All right. So, yeah, go check that one out once again. It's from the world of John Wick, Ballerina, in theaters now. All right, when we come back, one of Ryan's friends is a screenwriter, a professor, and we're going to talk to him and do some technical segments.
An all-around schmuck.
Well, if it's Ryan's friend, you know. But this is going to be a long conversation. It's going to be the last two segments are going to be us talking with him about, you know, developing characters and how it's done and ways that you can do things. And the way thing you got to look at it, too, is it's not just for movies, really, isn't it? It can be done if you're writing a novel, if you're, you know, anything that you're going to need some sort of character development for. This is going to be a great tool to have in your bag, and he's going to talk to us about that here in the next couple of segments coming up on Dave and Ryan's Movie Review.
Hey, idiots. We're back from commercial. Dave and Ryan's Movie Review, Segment 2, and action.
So from time to time on Dave and Ryan's Movie Review, we like to do a technical segment because that's where, you know, Ryan's heart is when it comes to movies is you know, filmmaking and lighting and all those great things. So this time around, Ryan's brought a friend of his in over the phone, and we're going to talk with him about, you know, character development and things like that. So, Ryan, I'm going to kind of turn it over to you now.
All right, so this is my good friend Todd. Todd has been teaching for 16 years in film and media. He has a master's degree from AFI, that's the American Film Institute, and he was an intern for DreamWorks back in the day. So, Todd, how you doing?
Great. Hey, thanks for having me on the show, Ryan.
Well, thanks for being here.
Hey.
Yeah. So we're going to talk about some script writing and character development today because I know you're a big writing guy, and I can't spell or read.
Yeah, so I know Ryan's working, you know, we're working and writing constantly on new ideas and new scripts, and so today I just want to introduce 4 simple suggestions on creating a new film character. And so to start out with, you know, when we say a movie character, I'd like you to just think, Ryan, what are some of the names of your favorite movie characters? So, Dave?
For some of my favorite movie characters? Oh, that is a tough one. Well, there's always, you know, Luke Skywalker. That's a good one. You know, Skywalker, the last name there. That's, you know, memorable. What about you, Dave?
I was going to say, I was actually going to go with Han Solo.
Han Solo.
That's a great one for me. And you know,
you're riding solo.
That's right. Indiana Jones. Yes, it is another Harrison Ford character. But those are just iconic characters and great names that people remember.
Yep.
Right. And so, you know, I wrote a few down. I'm just going to rattle them out here. John Wick, James Bond, La Femme Nikita, Ferris Bueller, Don Corleone, Bueller. Morpheus, Mary Poppins, Buzz Lightyear, Hannibal Lecter, Black Widow, Katniss Everdeen, Buffy, the Vampire Slayer, E.T., and Waiting for Guffman. So, when we hear these, they're very memorable. Some other, you know, simple characteristics about picking a good name is that it pops, right? It has a nice ebb and flow, and it's not just your regular name. You know, one beef I have is my name is Todd, and in the movies, the stereotypical villain is Todd, right? Todd always gets killed. Todd always gets made fun
art
of.
Art reflects life, Todd.
For whatever reason, you know, Todd has been stereotypical, you know, go after that kind of a name. But you can make something interesting like Todd something, add something on to that to make it or interesting. So you make something like Todd Tucker Must Die, and all of a sudden this banal name becomes a little bit more interesting. So when you name your characters, think of something that pops, it has a nice ebb and flow, and it's very memorable. And that's a good place to start, because once you know the name of your character, you're able to write towards that character, right? And in some examples, you write directly to the character. Buffy the Vampire Slayer is just that. But Happy Gilmore, you know, is anything but happy. And this, because of his name, that creates a more dynamic character.
Yeah.
I get that. That makes sense. I never thought about it that way, but it does make sense.
Yeah, I'm excited for Happy Gilmore, too, because, I mean, we know what the character is, and we're going to see this character, you know, in new situations. And so I guess it's very memorable once you know the name and you know exactly how they're going to act.
Yeah.
And that's kind of my next suggestion is you have to be the expert on your movie character, right? And you have to know everything about them. Not just, you know, what they look like, but their psychology, what their fears are, what they're addicted to. You have to know this whole backstory. And the reason why is, you know, you're not going to use every single detail as you write your script, but you really need to know how they're going to act in any scene or scenario and how they would behave. For yeah. example, so Dave, you know Ryan really well.
Sadly, yes.
Too well. If Ryan all of a sudden came across a nudist colony, how would he react? Like, what would he say? What would he do?
Well, probably the first thing he would do, knowing Ryan like I do, is he would join them. And then at some point in the day, yeah. I'm thinking that Ryan is getting arrested.
Okay. All right.
What?
This is a little bit revealing and incriminating. But Ryan, you're so much more interesting now as a character. I bet you're going to start getting a lot of emails and calls. Local nudist colony here. But you can see how you know each other
live.
So well, you know exactly how they're going to react. Like my dad or my mom, if something happened to them, I know exactly what they would say, exactly what they would do. And you, as a goal, you want to try and get to that point where you can do that for the characters you have created.
Yeah. Now, let me ask you a question, Todd. With that whole thing being said, when you create a character, and do you base it off like maybe someone you know or, and kind of how they would react, like the example you just gave with me, or is it just completely off the top of your head?
Great. That's a great question. So I love, you know, you can only write what you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so you really have to draw upon life experience. And so for writers, this is great because you're writing all the time. You just go out there in public right now, and the world is so crazy and messed up. You're going to get into conflicts. You're going to see crazy things every day, right? So you step outside, and all of a sudden, a nudist colony runs by, and you see your friend Ryan for the first time.
All in the flesh.
Like, really see him.
Yeah. You write this down in a journal, and you're like, hey, this weird, you know, experience happened to me today. I don't know exactly how I'm going to use it, but I've kind of collected these experiences and these really interesting characters. And, you know, that's a real-life experience, and so I can draw upon that later as I develop my characters.
So,
to answer your question, I think it's good to, you know, draw upon, write what you know, draw upon your own experiences, and collect as much real-life experience from real-life characters. Because, I mean, if it's interesting to you, it'll be interesting to an audience.
So, Todd, just kind of backtracking a little bit to what you said, do you do a lot of people watching? Do you do a lot of journaling and things like that? Or do you try and just kind of base off what you already know?
I love bookstores because I write as much as I can for what I know. And then what I don't know, I'll go to the library or do research on how, you know, how, like for like medical terminology, investigations, murder mysteries. Another thing is dialogue. For example, you know, I'm from the 80s and 90s, so I, you know, dude, you know, bro, whatever. But then you come to...
I have never heard you say bro.
Cool. Well, that's to my friends.
I'll just see myself out.
Yeah, but right now, see, it's Ryan, if it was my high school kid, I'd be like, oh, dude, Ryan, you're like the Riz, or like you're, you know, you're
low-key this is the awesome. This is the high school kid. You bought him a vehicle that he will get pulled over all the time.
Yeah.
Todd bought his son an illegal truck.
Well,
it was illegal, yeah. So I do people watch. I mean, you just sit in the mall and you just listen to how people talk. And if they say something memorable, you just kind of take notes again and you write that down. You're like, you can tweak it a little bit. But you're looking for memorable dialogue that really impacts you somehow, right? It makes you angry, it makes you emotional, it makes you sad. I remember those words that people say, and I'm like, wow, that'd be a great line, you know, for one of my characters. It fits their persona, and it would be good. So, yeah, I do a lot of journal writing. I have a sketchbook in every room, and I just write down things as I hear them or experience them. And, again, I don't think you're going to put it to the right script at the beginning, but eventually, as you develop a lot more material, you'll find a really good use for it. But if you don't document it, then you probably lose it. It's, you know, it's not all this common. If you don't entertain it at that moment, you'll lose it. So
right. So you're creating this character bank, so to speak.
That's a great way to describe it. Yeah, you're just collecting all of these thoughts, and it really helps your writing later when you have the so-called writer's block. You just go back to your bank and just start to look through.
Yeah. Well, one of my favorite things to do when I go to Vegas is to go down to Fremont Street and just, as you said, Dave, people watch and just, you know, just come up with, like, backstories for people you see, because there's a lot of interesting characters down there.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah. The last time I was there, a naked lady in a wheelchair, about 70 years old, came up and took a picture with me, and I was like... You know, you can't write that kind of stuff, right? Those are like real characters, real people, and it makes life beautiful when you get to meet and run into these people. Even people, you know, I'd say that you don't get along with. For me, it makes life more manageable, right? So you come across like a Karen or somebody that's yelling at you, or you're getting in a situation while you're waiting in line, and you just listen to how they talk. Look at what makes them. What is their behavior? Why are they angry at you? Why are you angry at them? And it's kind of cathartic, because you need to go home and be like, oh, man, your name is going into my script, and I'm writing the same, you know, scenario. Because, you're banking these emotions and these feelings, and then you can express them again through your writing. And so it's really a fun thing to do when you meet that person that just kind of gets under your skin.
Well, I squirreled there for a minute, because I'm all of a sudden now I'm trying to think of a backstory of a naked 70-year-old lady in a wheelchair.
There she was from the 70s. She used to love riding her scooter, and now she scoots up to old men.
That's right. Something. Something.
They called her Debbie.
Debbie.
Whatever works. Yeah. Whatever works.
And when you see somebody that's really interesting, I think what we gravitate towards is all of the perfect qualities, right? Are they extremely ugly? Are they extremely beautiful? And we first, you know, I guess judge and scan people for everything we love about them. But for developing characters, my suggestion is to not start with that route. You know, when I think of I'm creating this character for myself, I love my character too much. And what I mean by that is that I neglect why this character is bad. What is their fatal flaw?
Yeah, you become too attached to a character, and that's why you always have other people read it, you know, and let them know kind of the direction you want to go. And they might say something you don't want to hear, and you got to take that with a grain of salt, but basically that's how you develop the character more.
Right? Yeah, that's a great sign that you love your character too much. As you get feedback, you know, like I like this. You know, they should be doing this instead of that. That's a great note, because I call it you got to step on your puppies, and that's a morbid thought. But as a writer, you have to be the most cruel person to your own character, which means you have to target and expose all of those fatal flaws.
Yeah.
So instead of saying, oh, wow, my character is awesome because, you know, they're sexy, they're beautiful, they're rich, and they have all these weapons.
They have no flaws.
Like, cool. you flip that script and you say, okay, this is why I hate this person. You know, this guy is old. He's over the hill. He's divorced. Still lives with his mother. He's unemployed. Picks his nose. You know, he's addicted to Dr. Pepper. Why do I hate this person?
Dr. Pepper.
You know, this isn't an autobiography, by the way. This is a purely coincidence.
I wasn't going to say anything, Todd, but...
I knew you were going to say something. I know you're thinking you're right. But
thinking and saying are two different things.
Thank goodness for that.
Those weaknesses are what really make the character more rounded and dynamic. The reason why is because when we introduce a character by everything we hate about them or their flaws, is it creates a vulnerable human nature, which makes them more believable. And most importantly, for an audience, it creates empathy. Like, we actually care about this character because we have some kind of personal connection to that character. And the example I like to use, and this is an iconic example, but Superman, right? Superman is the fastest, he's faster than a speeding bullet. He can jump higher buildings in a single bound. But if he touches a green rock, then he dies. So, you know, I don't care how perfect and strong he is. All of a sudden, he's human to me and vulnerable to me because he can't go near kryptonite, right?
Yes, his one weakness is green glow sticks.
That's what makes the character interesting. another example, I'd say, is James Bond. And when we, you know, a superficial pass, when we say describe James Bond, is that he is sexy, he's well-dressed, he's a secret man of mystery, he's a freaking spy for Her Majesty, the Queen of England, right? He gets to drive Aston Martins. He sleeps with beautiful women. He knows martial arts. This guy gets to travel the world and use high-tech gadgets and weapons. And, you know, that's, like, exotic to me, right? That's like, oh, I want that life.
Yeah.
And so that's a little bit interesting, but that's not what makes Bond interesting. You go through his movies, and he's actually one of the saddest characters to exist because he's a barely functioning alcoholic, right? He's always drinking. It's not the martini shaken, not stirred. It's that he's always drinking a martini, right? He's emotionally unstable.
What if that's one of the things that we find appealing?
Yeah, right,
always
right.
Drinking.
Why are you pointing at me?
I'm not. I'm making a point.
Hey, Todd, we're going to have to take a break right now, but when we come back, we'll be speaking more with Todd.
All right, imbeciles. Everyone quiet down. Dave and Ryan's movie review, segment 3, and action.
All right, and welcome back. We are here with my good buddy Todd, and we're going to pick up right where we left off talking about character development.
Okay.
Todd, in the last segment, we ended with the James Bond. We were talking about how he's a sad alcoholic. And Dave was pointing at me.
His laundry list is huge because he's. You know, we were saying, you know, he's emotionally unstable, and so many of the people can relate to that, right, Ryan? He's impulsive.
Hey, we're not pointing fingers, Todd, or else I'm pointing back.
He's impulsive. He's arrogant and prideful. This guy is alone, right? He's a loner. Not being incriminating here. He's constantly learning how to survive in the world, right? And the last thing is, who would want to be a guy that, you know, you have so many enemies that hate you, want to kill you, that you really can't go anywhere in public, right? You have to live the secret life the rest of your life. So when you think about that, you're like, you know, it's exotic, but then, you know, what makes him kind of interesting is he's got to live with this other, this big trailer of baggage in his life that makes him a more realistic character. And that's why I think the Bond character has been able to, you know, transfer from different actors and over the, you know, decades of movie history, there's always a Bond film coming out.
Let me ask you, with that being said, now, when you develop a character, you usually have someone in mind or kind of someone in mind who you think would want to play them. And with, like, James Bond, he switches actor to actor. So when you're writing a character, are you keeping that in mind, or are you more just kind of generalizing or specific, like, for a specific person or something like that?
You know, it's a give and take. It's hard because sometimes when I'm writing my, like, a comedy script, I'm like, oh, I want this comedian to play that. But then you're thinking exactly how they would talk and they would... So you can kind of mess up, you know, introduce too much to your own story if you have a character in mind. And, it, you know, studios may not want that because what if they can't secure that talent, right? What if they can't get Tom Cruise? Then, you know, you can't. You have to put somebody else in that role, and if it's written for that specific actress or actor, then that might be very complicated. So, you know, if you're hired to write the script specifically for an actor or actress, then yes. But if not, you really have to keep the door open so that, yeah, you can translate to different characters. You know, the Bond character could easily be a female character, right? You could have Atomic Blonde kind of a
Dave shaking his head
kind
no.
of a character take over the Bond series, and that would drive a lot of people crazy. But then, you know, it's such a great character that it can translate across different universes at the same time. And if you pigeonhole yourself by saying, I can only do this with this person, then that might be limiting and tying your hands behind your back. That being said, there are some movies, like, you know, when you say John Wick, it has to be Keanu, right? Yeah. You can't just say, oh, it's going to be this other person, because it's just not going to work, you know, with that other person. So, yeah.
And with this, I do remember of a time where me and you were working on a script, and you wanted Mike Myers, and I thought Craig Ferguson would be better for this one character role. Do you remember that? With the school grounds keeper for the school for the soccer when you were riding.
Yeah, so we just had a sumo wrestling match and I beat you.
No, you did not.
Myers is going to be in.
I was right and you know it.
No, you know, a lot of writers, you know, you think you want to write for the Hollywood A-list actors and actresses. But I would suggest start with the characters that you meet every day that you just love because they're so unique. They have quirks, and more importantly, they have like these weird weaknesses and addictions and things that are just really interesting about those people. That material is more easily adapted into a screenplay than saying I can only use, you know, this A-list actor or actress. Mm-hmm. I think that's a great way to write, but through influences, right, of people and actors that you think could possibly be in your screenplay.
Yeah, I agree 100%.
So, the last thing, you know, the suggestion I have when you're writing for your characters is you have to be able to create as much conflict as possible. A story where they just completely succeed is, you know, there's no conflict, there's no story, right?
Boring.
So, a good way to do this is by using a simple sentence, and it's this. It's character A wants X, but something gets in the way. So let's try an example. Brian, I'm writing a short film with you, and let's say Dave wants lunch, right? So Dave, you're hungry. It's 2 o'clock. You know, you've been working all morning, and you're hungry. So your goal is to just get lunch. Now that's a simple event. So it's every day everybody gets lunch. So it's not so interesting. But what's going to make our character Dave is a very interesting character, but we want to add conflict and make Dave show more of what he's all about. So. Ryan, what are some restaurants that Dave likes?
Burger King.
Burger King? Okay. So let's say that Dave wants lunch, but he can only go to Burger King, right? So it's like Burger King supersize me. He's going to eat at Burger King every day for a month or every
year. Way, Dave.
So instantly, awesome. There's a little bit of a story here, right? So in price, there's all these restaurants, but all of a sudden, you can only eat at Burger King. Right, so we have a little bit of conflict, but still, that's not, you know, we want to develop that a little bit more. So let's add, hey, you know, Dave wants to eat at Burger King, but the restaurant and price is closed. So the nearest Burger King is in Spanish Fork, and you have to drive through Spanish Fork Canyon to get there.
I don't think your lunch break's that long.
No,
I'm trying to put these roadblocks and this conflict into a simple thing, going to lunch, but now you have to geographically drive through Spanish Fork Canyon. So now think of all the conflicts that can happen when somebody just tries to drive through Spanish Fork Canyon, right? What if it's snowing, right? What if Dave hits a deer and runs off the road, right? What if he runs into a nudist colony with his friend Ryan, you know, and all of a sudden he has to become a member and move to Bangkok? So you can just take it, the sky's the limit on where you can take your story once you know what the goal is of what your character wants, and creating conflict by saying, hey, I know you want to go to Burger King, but I'm going to do everything I can to create a roadblock and stop you from achieving that goal.
I'm going
to
flatten your tire.
That could be another one.
Yeah. Flatten the tire, you know, cut the brake lines, do whatever you can to stop that, and that's adding conflict and conflict. So what happens now, for each of these conflicts, as Dave overcomes each of these conflicts, we start to see his character come out, right? So it's not exactly that Dave is Superman, but Dave is a normal human guy with extraordinary talent for overcoming all of this craziness and trying to get through the cave.
Yeah, and just watching him getting frustrated would be comedy gold.
So the last slide is, you know, the greater the conflict, the greater the character. So you really want to create as much bad and terrible events for your character as you can, because when they overcome that, then your audience is like begins to root and cheer for and connect with that character, because they want them to succeed. I mean, as a writer, you know your character's going to succeed, and that kind of hinders you. You want to get to that point. You don't want to be at that point. You want to get to that point where you're rooting for your characters and you want them to succeed. Now, in Hollywood endings, yes, they succeed, and not only, you know, they don't always succeed, but then you can have another powerful statement about your story, what you're trying to say in terms of your theme. But definitely, you have a connection between your character and your audience. Yeah. And they'll love your characters even that much more. So I guess to summarize today, just pick a great name, know your character inside and out, and be the expert on your character. Be your character's worst enemy and target those fatal flaws. And once you have all that stuff, start creating as much conflict as you can for your character, and it'll help your writing, and you'll be able to write wonderful scenes and wonderful characters.
Yeah, and this isn't just for screenwriting. This is like writing in general. Like if you're writing a novel or something, you know, this would be good for character development for like a book, or even, you know, just like a play or anything like that you're working on. This, you know, this character development that we talked about today, this could be used in multiple fashions.
Definitely.
Axel, you know what? Once again, I learned stuff today.
And the more you know.
That's right.
Knowing is half the battle.
G.I. Joe. But no, I appreciate, you know, Ryan, thank you for getting a hold of Todd here. And Todd, thanks for taking out the time to talk to us about this kind of stuff. As I said, when we do these technical segments, I always learn something. And I did learn something today. I learned that Ryan wants to be a nudist.
Deep down to all of us.
And God help us all.
Remember that the greatest story you'll ever tell is your own. So,
yes.
You know, yeah, hey, tweets their own. If you want to join that colony, go ahead.
My life story is rated NC-17.
Wow.
I'll probably be banned in the U.S.
I think so.
It's definitely banned in China.
I'll never see it or read the script.
That's a good sign then.
I hate you both.
All right, take us home, Ryan.
All right, I just want to thank Todd. Todd, is there any last words of wisdom you want to grace us with before we wrap it up?
Well, thanks for having me, and happy writing and creating great characters. Just shout out this week to fathers, all those single dads.
Yeah.
If Bill Belichick can get remarried and Tom Cruise is still jumping out of airplanes, then, you know, 70 and 60 is the new 20. So.
That's right.
Wish you the best, single dad.
I need to close my mouth before I say something bad.
I think you should. Todd, thank you so much for taking out the time and putting up with Ryan and his shenanigans. I really, this was a great segment. I really appreciate you taking out the time for it.
All right, thanks, Dave. Hey, Ryan, you're in all of my scripts, by the way.
Oh, I figured.
All right, so that's going to do it for this week. Next week, all new show, and rumor has it we're going to do it live?
Yeah, live on Facebook
and
YouTube.
Oh, boy, get ready for that one. We'll post some more stuff throughout the week as we get ready and for the build-up for that one. Should be a lot of fun. But until then, go see a movie.
that brings us to the end of this week's journey. But don't worry, Dave and Ryan have more movies to watch and more opinions to spew next week. You can relive today's episode at CastleCountryRadio.com. Thanks for joining us on Ryan and Dave's Movie Review.
Ah, the hell with it. Send it in, we're done. See you next week.